You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Perhaps the most difficult aspect of the COVID-19 pandemic is confronting the uncomfortable reality of death. As of this broadcast, Monday morning, more than 1,200 people have died in Illinois, and more than 40,000 have died across the country because of the coronavirus. Many others have been brought to what they thought was the brink, landing in ICUs or on ventilators, texting loved ones where to find important documents in case they didn't make it out. And because of the nature of the virus and its contagiousness, a patient's final days look different, with no visitors allowed and families having to mourn their loved ones alone. It's a terrible thing to talk about, but something many of us are being forced to plan and discuss, regardless of our age or underlying health conditions. Our two guests today can help bring some perspective and offer advice when it comes to end-of-life planning. University of Illinois Law Professor Richard Kaplan joins us. He specializes in health and elder law and actually developed one of the first law school courses on the topic. He also authored Elder Law in a Nutshell. Professor Kaplan, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you very much.
Also joining us from Bloomington is Dr. Paul Peterson. He's an internist and chief medical officer for OSF St. Joseph Medical Center there, and is the immediate past president of the Illinois State Medical Society. His term actually just concluded over the weekend. Dr. Peterson, welcome to the 21st as well.
Thank you so very much for having us on.
So according to a recent New York Times article, only 1 in 3 American adults have completed advance directives. Why do you think that number is so low, Professor Kaplan?
There are a variety of reasons. First of all, most people don't want to think about death. Secondly, there's not been as much attention to these forms as there has been to other forms such as wills. Wills have been around for nearly 5 centuries, and the majority of Americans don't have them either. The fact remains that people can find these forms on the websites of all kinds of places and in hospitals and medical offices. But for the most part, there's a lot of denial. They don't want to think about themselves being unable to communicate. And that percentage of 1/3 is actually distributed very differently across age groups, so that older people, it's much higher. Younger people, it's much lower, even though many of the famous cases from Terri Schiavo on down have been of young women or young people more generally in their 20s.
And Dr. Peterson, what about you? Do you have a sense as to why that number is so low?
I think Professor Kaplan is absolutely correct. There's a lot of denial about the issue of facing death, and it's a fear of oftentimes not being dead, but of dying, and the process of dying. And these documents can give you significant control over that process of how you want that to happen. And if you, in the instance in which you're not able to make decisions, you have named someone, a healthcare power of attorney, to be able to make those decisions for you. It's about your decisions, not about theirs.
Mm-hmm. And I want to remind our listeners that if you want to join the conversation or if you have questions or comments for our guests, our number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21ST Show, 21st Show. Professor Kaplan, when we talk about end-of-life planning, what does that entail? For example, what is an advance directive versus a will?
It's a great question, and people interpret it in various ways. In fact, I've gotten a couple calls recently by young parents who were concerned about creating a property will. It's typically not what's meant as an advance directive, but sometimes people will subsume that within the category of end-of-life planning. But for the most part, end-of-life planning is understood as creating some sort of advance directive, pretty much what Dr. Peterson was talking about. One common form is a durable power of attorney for health care, where a person doesn't make any specific decisions, just designates a person to whom medical providers can ask what should be done in this circumstance. The other common form is called a living will. It's not as popular, but for many people, it establishes exactly what they're looking for. Namely, it indicates that under certain circumstances, typically when they're terminal, they don't want certain procedures done if all they're going to do is delay death. And so it's a matter of whether you want to indicate whether a person should not proceed with certain so-called death-delaying procedures, or whether you simply want to say that if I cannot speak for myself, here is the person I want you to consult.
And Dr. Peterson, have you had to confront situations where these end-of-life plans were not in place?
It happens daily, unfortunately. Oh. And that is the challenge of this. And frequently, it's not so much the paper, but those conversations that need to happen between the person who's thinking about this and the decision makers or the family who's around. Very frequently, we'll have, mom who is in her last moments of life and hasn't made any decisions about this. And, a cousin from California calls and says, oh, you got to keep mom alive until I get there. Those are very challenging times for people, and it really is helpful to get this done up front and have those discussions. Yeah, the discussions end up in paper, as Professor Kaplan has talked about. But, the saying is it's never too early until it's too late.
Yeah, and do you end up being the intermediary in those cases as a physician?
As a physician, you end up trying to figure out who is going to be the decision maker. What was it that mom really wanted? And frequently the families are not in agreement about what mom might have wanted. And therein lies the challenge, because mom knew exactly what she wanted in most instances. She just didn't let anybody know.
And Professor Kaplan, so what are some of the plans that everyone should have in place? Like, does everybody need an advance directive?
I would say so. That is, if people have strong views as to what they want done to them when they can't speak, then they need to make that clear. And as Dr. Peterson indicated, whether it's in the form of paper or just conversations, these are uncomfortable conversations, but they need to happen. A lot of times people just don't imagine they'll be in that situation. And following on his wonderful aphorism that I love about never too early until it's too late, a similar kind of idea is that you don't need this until you do, and then it's too late. That is, these forms need to be completed, or these discussions need to be had while the person is still competent. They can properly say, I don't need this now. I can speak for myself, and they're absolutely right. But the fact is they need to do it before it's needed. And what sometimes intimidates some people is they're a little concerned that the decision they make today they may feel differently about when the time actually comes. And a point that they should know about is you aren't making irrevocable decisions. That is, as long as a person is competent, they will be able to say what they want done. These forms or these discussions are only relevant if it comes to the point where they can't tell you what's done.
And how do you go about completing an advance directive then? I mean, is there a, just download something on the internet and fill it out, or do you have to call a lawyer? How does that work?
You can certainly go to websites. The Illinois, I think the Medical Society has free forms. They are typically state specific. So if people are living in Missouri or Illinois, they want to get the Illinois forms. But they are available. If one were to go in any hospital or nursing home, typically as part of the admission process, these forms have to be presented. But sometimes people would rather do it when things are a little bit more leisurely. And so they can find these forms on the web. Some people like to discuss these with their physician, and others want to talk about this with an attorney as part of an estate planning process independently. Usually around April 15th, there's something that some law schools will hold called Medical Decisions Day, where they help people fill these out. Typically, law students are doing it during this time of pandemic. Of course, all these interactions have been suspended. But if people just want to look over these forms, they can find them on the web, as well as a fair amount of guidance as to who you should be asking to do the decision making.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Professor Richard Kaplan from the University of Illinois College of Law and Dr. Paul Peterson, Chief Medical Officer at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. We've been speaking about end-of-life planning and some things that people of all ages can have prepared, regardless of their health. And remember, you can always join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Dr. Peterson, particularly in the context of COVID-19, how do these decisions assist doctors or family members if they've been made ahead of time?
Well, certainly the elderly and infirm are having a worse time with this virus. There's an occasional young person who is in pretty darn good health and has a significant problem with this virus. But certainly the elderly and the infirm already have significant challenges. And if they haven't made those decisions beforehand, sometimes being on a ventilator for 2 to 3 weeks to get through this is really not what they wanted to do. So it's important to make sure that everybody has, and I agree with Professor Kaplan, there's no reason not to have one, an advance directive of some form. But especially in this time, I think it's really important for those folks because, as you mentioned, there's no visitors coming in. You can't be around, and it's hard to get that same feel for how mom or dad or cousin is doing in the hospital over the phone. Even with video conferencing, it's challenging to see how they're doing and what's really happening. So it's very important. Illinois State Medical Society has a whole booklet that starts in how to start that conversation, and then has all those forms available. So that you can pick and choose between them, a pulsed form, physician order for life-sustaining treatment, a living will, a standard form for healthcare power of attorney. A variety of those are all in that packet and can be downloaded from ISMS.org.
And we'll have a link to that on our Twitter page. You can find that at 21st Show on Twitter. Professor Kaplan, as we just heard Dr. Peterson saying, this virus it can be serious for people of all ages, but younger adults have had a lower death rate than older adults. But even so, Professor, you would, I think, probably say that it's still important for younger people to have these plans in place, even if we weren't experiencing a pandemic, right?
Well, that's certainly true. And as Dr. Peterson pointed out, there are younger people who are succumbing to it. It's a lower percentage. But one never knows whether they're going to be in that small percentage. And among other things, one of the concerns of younger people is this how you want your remaining dollars, if it's going to be a matter of copayment for certain procedures to be spent, or do you think the family would be better off in other ways? And what a lot of people don't realize is they think that if they don't fill out a form, this will never happen to them. It doesn't work that way. And with the COVID-19 in particular, people really don't know when they're coming into contact with infected people. And so it may literally sneak up on them, and they may not have as much time to plan and to hold these discussions as they like. In addition, Illinois has what's called the healthcare surrogacy statute, which indicates that if a person has not completed a form, there will be a designated list of decision makers that are provided. It may not, however, be the list that people want, and therefore it's particularly incumbent on younger people to see if they want a particular person. It may be a cousin who is medically informed, and that person would be a better designated decision maker than, say, their spouse or their adult child. Then they need to affirmatively designate that person.
So only a couple of minutes left in our conversation today, but Dr. Peterson, it can be really difficult to have these conversations. People, as we said at the beginning, don't like to talk about death. They don't like to think about it. Dr. Peterson, do you have any advice for how to get families to talk about end-of-life planning?
Well, I think it starts with the recognition that we're all going to die. We don't all, you know, the saying is, you know, the only thing that's sure is death and taxes. Well, you know, you don't have to pay taxes. You can go to jail. But you do have to die. And now you have the opportunity to control some of that and some of those ways that the things that are going to happen to you during that time that may not necessarily be for you. And I think that's where that happens. I had a discussion years ago with a lady who had been on a ventilator off and on. She had terrible lungs, and you know, she was having this discussion with her husband. She said, "I never, ever, ever want to go on that ventilator again." And he said, "Well, you know, honey, I'm not sure I can do that." And she said, "Well, I'm going to get somebody who will then." So it's important to have that discussion and start off that discussion with, here's how I think about my life and how I want to end it and how I think about the amount of suffering that I want to go through at the end of my life.
And Professor Kaplan, just about 30 seconds, same question to you. Any advice for getting people to actually have these difficult conversations?
Yeah, I think actually now may be the opportune time. Namely, the COVID-19 is wall-to-wall coverage. And so people are thinking about these kinds of issues. It's not an inappropriate time to say, wow, if this happened to me, what would we do?
All right. We're going to leave it there that we have been speaking with Professor Richard Kaplan, who specializes in elder law and health law at the University of Illinois School of Law, and Dr. Paul Peterson, Chief Medical Officer at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. He's also the just recently past president of the State Medical Society. Thank you both for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much
for having us.
And a reminder that we will have links to the booklet and forms that they talked about on our website and on our Twitter page, which is 21STShow. Coming up after the break, a little bit lighter subject. Museums may be closed to the public, but with virtual tours, you can still explore exhibits from your home. Stay tuned.